and welcome. I'm Dennis Prout, Certified Financial Planner.
And I'm Shay Pataja, the co-host of
New Retirement Radio,
the podcast.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice, and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
And welcome back to New Retirement Radio on WTCM with Prout Financial Design, with Prout Financial Design in Traverse City. Starring today, Mr. Dennis Prout and Heidi Thompson live in the studio. Welcome back.
It's great to be here, Ron. Thank you so much. On Thursday, April 22nd, 2021. Boy, what a gorgeous day we have here today. I did hear the fans running last night in the local orchards in the area.
Good.
Wow, that was cold. Yeah. And I can tell by the worry lines on the some of the people that I talk to that they're concerned about that. But it looks like the weather's going to be, it's on the mend here, on the warmer side here in the next 7 to 10 days. We'll take it. So we have a lot to talk about today. First of all, joining us, good morning, Heidi Thompson.
Good morning. It's good to be here.
That's great to have you as well. Our managing executive at Prout Financial Design,
Ron.
And also a retirement income certified professional. And this week we're talking about charitable giving. And do we have her doing the stats this week, or Heidi? Okay,
we do.
Perfect.
Yes.
So we'll also have Shay stats, and then before we get really going, want to say thank you to all the folks who have come in here recently. As it's warming up, more folks are coming in that we've never met before. So really do appreciate each coming in, questions, concerns, issues related to retirement and details around that, and had some very in-depth conversations. So always exciting from this side of that part. So charitable giving is an interesting conversation, I think, because it helps us move beyond ourselves and helps us keep from looking at the end of our boots, if you will, too closely in our lives. Yes, Ron?
By the way, can I just mention on that, Richard and Diana Mylock just donated $3 million to the Northwest Michigan College Foundation, the most of any living donor ever.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Wow. So what a great example.
Yeah.
Amazing. $3 million. Well, I've not met them before, but my gosh, kudos to them. Huge.
Huge.
So there are a lot of things that charitable giving can do and does do. And I'm going to start with this particular part of it. First off, most of your advisors will not talk to you about charitable giving. Why? Because it's so personal and they're concerned that they will offend you. Well, why wouldn't they do that? Why are they concerned about that? Just because of that advisor-client relationship. They are concerned about offending clients. That's a common theme amongst advisors. So you may need to bring it up to them. Do you think charitable giving makes sense? You may surprise them by asking them that. It can involve several different ways of giving, but they can also be incredibly significant. So parts of this, number one, it can help you celebrate your own success. Oh my gosh, I never thought that we could have done this well. It's shocking. And we have some examples of that. It can be a blessing to you in that it helps you maintain perspective. Helps you maintain perspective by looking out and beyond yourself. How can I help the community? What are the needs that I really see, that I'm up and close and personal to, that I've observed, and the people that are affiliated or associated with that particular entity? it can teach those who follow, which Heidi was sharing before the program here when we were talking about in the notes. Her grandfather?
My great-grandfather.
Your great-grandfather.
Yep.
Parm Gilbert.
Yep. He was a circuit court judge here in Traverse City, and before that he was the city attorney. And so he did a lot of giving during his lifetime. So,
well, a lot of giving in forms of there's still some areas named after him.
That's correct. Like Gilbert Park out at Long Lake. Yeah. That was some property he donated.
The Lodge.
Twin Lakes, the Gilbert Lodge. He donated the Twin Lakes Park. He also donated to the Boy Scouts at one time, Gilbert Pines, if anybody remembers that. That's a little bit farther out than Long Lake. And, yeah, all those areas. He was very much wanted to have areas that everybody could go to and enjoy the beauty of northern Michigan and be outside. Yeah.
He was in the news. We were looking back at history. 1922, the knickers controversy?
It was the knickers controversy on Front Street, women trying to wear knickers Front Street. He was the city attorney, I believe, at the time.
Talk about edgy. The prosecuting attorney for the city, Parm C. Gilbert, printed an apology on the front page of the Record Eagle apologizing to the affronted parent, Upsall Hobbs. Quite affronted indeed. So anyway, it's incredible. Some people would say, well, that's 100 years ago almost. Well, indeed it was. So you teach those who follow. And Heidi, you had mentioned as you still drive by some of those parks once in a while, and you...
Oh, it makes me smile, because when I see kids out at the park playing, I'm like, wow, you know, my great-grandfather had a role in that. And the legacy that he's left is still felt today. And we have a strong affiliation with northern Michigan, and it just makes all of us very happy.
Talk about deep roots, right? Incredible. Yeah. So number five, it gives you a perspective to join with that person or organization in a unique way. It can help you leverage your funds to do things that obviously you couldn't do on your own for other people in their own perspectives and or their specialties. Six, the world is much bigger than me or you. It really is. So this is not all encompassing or inclusive. These are just some notes I wrote down here this morning. And I hope that helps you and all of us in thinking about giving. It's much bigger than us. Story that I kind of alluded to last week was a situation I was in. We were asked to join with a group of other gentlemen about 12-13 years ago to a trip to India where there was a mission organization working to help children and adults both in educating women in a lot of cases, even in the evenings with continuing education so that they could learn to read, write, and count money, if you will, and change so that they could just orient toward the basics of life.
Are you saying there were women out there that did not know how to count money?
Correct.
Wow.
They didn't even know how to count. I know. It just seems impossible to make change. Right. And so in this society, what's happening there is that they're working. Their own populace is working to help educate their people. And this organization helps fund these helps, if you will. Well, they needed a building, and they needed it badly. And as we had seen all the activities of this organization over the previous 4 or 5 days, we were joined together in a boardroom, and one of the gentlemen in that room had, we didn't know the story, he went to tell his story of how his company had made a huge find of oil in Utah, and he went through the whole thing about how they had to keep it down under, keep it really quite secret, for a while because the find was that huge. It was, I think, in the millions, hundreds of millions of barrels of oil. Well, he committed on that as a part of that story to give $1 million to that organization if the other gentleman in the room would also give $1 million. So there were about eight of us or so in that boardroom. And I remember looking around at them and trying not to look too much and thinking, well, if I divide that up, that's more than $100,000 for each of us. This is not going to be, this is a tall order. But it was amazing. Each of the guys stepped up in his own way that he could. And we were able to match that $1 million gift. And that is a meeting and a time I will never forget. You could have heard a pin drop in that room because we'd all seen the need for this building and because they needed a gathering place. There were a lot of different reasons for that need. And the efficiency of this organization and how low their costs were. On and on it went. You all get that. But we all just joined with. And for some of us, like myself, it took me more than a year to raise the funds to make that work. But I will never forget being a part of it.
Have you seen the building since then? Photos?
I've seen pictures. Yeah. Never been back to it. But the story of building it, it really took them a while to get reputable builders to get that building put together. It was, I think, almost 2 years, 3 years in the process of building it. And we were brought along with details and so forth. But it was an incredible experience to be a part of and to see up close how these people were making a difference within that organization. So all of us can do that, whether it's large or small, with our lives and in being willing to join with something bigger than ourselves. So how do we do this? Where are we on time, Ron? We're good. Okay, so first off are just gifts of cash. Obviously, we can just write a check, and that tends to get the best deduction tax-wise. You will certainly want to consult with your tax professional before you're making these kinds of gifts in some respects if you're not comfortable, and or your other advisors as well. Next are QCDs, Qualified Charitable Distributions. Some of the best money you can give is money out of your IRA. And this comes from your required minimum distribution or anytime after age 70 and a half, you can make a distribution from your IRA up to $100,000 per year to the charity of your choice, whether that's church or whatever. So sometimes these decisions are not easy. That was a conversation 2 days ago with a couple. They were wondering, should we give our whole RMD or a portion of it to our church? And this was not an easy decision for them to make, and I could see it. And they discussed it actively amongst themselves and decided to give the whole of their RMD to their local church. Mm-hmm. So these are very personal decisions in some respects. Number three, giving appreciated securities is also a great way to give because you get the full deduction for the full value of the stock or security itself, while your cost basis might have been much less. You bought Tesla a whole year ago, and it's worth 8 to 10 times, you know, what you paid for it. You could gift a portion of that Tesla stock to the church, if you like, and get a full deduction for the current value of that stock.
And avoid paying capital gains.
That too. So you don't have to turn it into cash and then write a check. Oh, because then you got to mess around with giving all the capital gains information to your accountant and then determine whether or not it's even deductible for yourself based on your own taxes. Well, whether or not it's deductible anyway is a part of the tax situation, but it usually is going to be much easier to just gift the securities and not pay any tax on that anyway For sure, that would be the case. Whether or not you can use it as a deduction will depend on your own particular tax bracket or rate. Number four, donor-advised funds. Donor-advised funds can be a great way to give. Tend to have a more complicated tax structure compared to other types of charitable giving. What it allows you to do is, what if I haven't made the decision about where I want to give this money to, and I've had an unexpected capital gain or our income continues to grow, and there grow our tax brackets as well? Most advisors would say tax brackets are going up here. And if that's the case, you're going to want to make yourself possibly avail yourself of more of these kinds of strategies. The donor advised fund allows you to get a deduction this year, even though you haven't decided which charities you want to give it to. So it goes into this pool, if you will, and then you can give to those organizations as you make up your mind about which one you want to give to the next year or in other years later as well. Okay. So Heidi, you're going to discuss strategies for charitable giving, more detail on the workings, the ins and the outs.
Yeah, just looking at this topic and some of the things that you're explaining, Dennis, there's just some tips to think about if you feel inclined to do one of these things. And just I have like six quick little things. First is when you're giving securities, like Dennis said, you want to look at the ones that have the highest appreciation, meaning you've made the most gain in those. Though if you're choosing among several different securities, you might want to take the one that has the lowest cost basis or the highest appreciation so that you get the tax benefit of that.
The maximum amount deductible if possible, you bet.
Correct. And then another strategy could be consider bunching your charitable giving in certain years. So maybe instead of giving every single year, you could give every 5 years or every 3 years. And the advantage to this is because of the high standard deduction that we have now, it's really hard to get to a point where you can deduct some of this charitable giving. But if you save up and you make a sizable one, maybe every 5 years, you may be able to have a tax advantage there that you can benefit from.
The standard deduction for single individuals, I think, is $12,000 to $13,000, and for couples is right around $25,000 or so. So that's the bar that you've got to get beyond. But obviously, then if you bunched and you're at $30,000, you're able to deduct that amount because above the $25,000, and then profit from that.
For 2020, didn't they say they allow you to deduct $300 even if you're under the standard deduction?
Correct. $300 was the amount allowed as a deduction for anyone who gives that amount in 2020 or beyond, you bet.
Yeah, but it was just 2020.
Oh, it wasn't 21?
No, it was just CARES Act.
Oh.
CARES Act, yeah.
Good.
All right. So number three is what Dennis just mentioned, the donor advised fund. The benefit to you on a donor advised fund is that you receive an immediate tax deduction, and then you can decide over time where that money goes. So you can get an immediate effect, but then you have a longer time period to distribute the funds.
I'm curious. Where's the money while you decide?
It's in that donor advised fund being managed, you bet. And you can invest it in a lot of different ways, using grouped accounts or getting help from that donor advised fund sponsor.
Okay, and then one of our favorite topics is Roth IRAs, or one of my favorite, I should say. Mm-hmm. But we've talked about doing Roth conversions on the show. So an idea here is maybe offset that income, that extra income from doing a significant Roth conversion with a charitable contribution. You can offset some of that tax implication by getting a deduction for the rise in income that you experience when you do the Roth conversion.
John Sluice just texted us. The 2021 number is $300, and up to $600 for the joint return. So it was continued for 2021. Wow. Yeah.
Thank you, John, for correcting that.
Yeah. For telling them that I was right for once. All right, Sarah, go ahead, Heidi.
All right.
Thank you, John.
The next tip is consider giving maybe your more, if you hold some complex assets or ones that have limited liquidity or that have a complicated tax structure, those might be more beneficial to give to a charity. It will help your heirs or beneficiaries not having to deal with maybe a more complex tax situation. So that could be another consideration that you may make.
As Heidi alluded to, you not only help yourself, but you could wind up helping your children as well, because you help give them the perspective of being involved or directly involved. Moving into a foundation, we've got clients whose children and grandchildren have been involved in that foundation as well. And so they get to work as a part of learning the activities of that those particular charitable organizations, and they get to be involved and get to profit from it in seeing the results of those gifts from all those years ago. Yes.
All right. And then my last tip here is the one that Dennis already mentioned. It's the QCD, or the Qualified Charitable Distribution. The thing that I love about QCDs is that anybody can benefit from this. You don't have to reach the standard deduction or any of these other limits. Anything you give from an IRA directly to a charity once you're 70 and a half, and it's a QCD, that is income you never have to claim, and the full amount of the money goes to the charity. So even if you're only giving a couple hundred dollars to thousands of dollars, it's a win-win, and I like that everybody can do it because, you know, even $50 is something that can make a difference to the charity, and you can get a benefit from doing that as well.
That's right. The perspective is the reality of that person's individual financial situation. For one person, $50 is a real sacrifice, obviously. For someone else, it's, you know, a pittance, of course. But where can that make the most difference? And how can you make the most difference with those gifts? So we have some time here yet?
We do, yes, sir.
All right. So the charitable trust basics. We're going to move on to charitable trust now. And as Heidi was talking, I was thinking, you know, the sky really is the limit. There is no limit on the types of strategies that you might employ in this charitable giving world. It's amazing what you can accomplish, not only for that charity in some respects, but also for yourself. Jackie Onassis set up a charitable lead trust. And with that charitable lead trust, the income went to the charity for a term of years. And then the assets then went to her children, but she received a significant deduction for having done that. And she also gave them the ability to see that activity of those that income going to the charity. But then the asset wasn't sacrificed, if you will, to the charity. The asset eventually did go then to her children, which is what a charitable lead trust does. The remainder or the corpus of that property goes to the individual beneficiaries. So if you want to see it eventually go to them, but at the same time get a deduction and be able to draw the income, rather have the income go to the charity during your lifetime or a term of years, wow, that could be amazing. So all of a sudden, you get to see that in action. The charitable remainder trust, the income, it's almost exactly the reverse. The income goes to individual beneficiaries. Usually, you or I, Ron, are giving that property to that charitable remainder trust. We get to draw an income for up to 20 years or for our lives, whichever is shorter. And then the corpus or the remainder then goes to the charity at our passing, whether it's one of us or two of us, okay, as a husband and wife, if you will. So, and you get significant tax deductions for having done this and setting these up. as well as the income can be significantly tax advantaged as well. So you certainly want to see what those numbers are as a part of this, but think about this. You have a significant appreciated property that's frankly not providing any income to you, but at the same time, you don't want to sell it and pay all the capital gains. Well, if you're charitably minded as a part of this, think of the power of this. You could actually place that property within the charitable remainder trust, liquidate the property, then have that turn that into income-producing securities so that you can draw an income from it, regardless of what the principal is in some cases, and draw a fixed amount. That's a charitable remainder annuity trust, or a CRAT, C-R-A-T.
Careful.
Charitable remainder annuity trust. That type of trust then pays a fixed amount. If it's a unit trust, a CRUT, a C-R-U-T, it pays, I know, it's so much fun, isn't it? The UT then pays you a percentage of what's left in the principal on a yearly basis. So that amount that pays out fluctuates. The tax deduction that you get for setting up a unit trust is greater than the annuity trust for reasons related to the fact that it's not a fixed amount that's being paid out. Generally, you're going to then pass more on to the charity in the future. The amount of your deduction is the equivalent to the present value, which we won't get into. But the deduction can be, again, significant for having set this up. The income can be significantly tax advantaged. And then you might be able to produce income from something that you weren't getting income from before, avoid all the tax, and then wind up giving that property to charity or back to your children, if you like, at the end of your lifetime. Wow. It's amazing the problems that you can solve by setting up a charitable account like this. Great conversation to have with your financial advisor who's aware of these kinds of trust, and or your tax counsel and your attorney or attorneys as well. Huge benefits to not only the community that you're a part of, but also then those organizations that you want to help too.
So, Dennis, it might be a good idea to talk to your family as well. Like you were saying with the lead trust versus the charitable remainder trust, there might be some assets that, you know, your children would like to have or your children would like to hold on to. And if by talking this through, that would help you make the decision which one best fits what you want to do.
Absolutely. So they may say, well, give that cottage to the trust. We love it, but we don't want to work with, I don't want to work with my three siblings and their spouses and everyone else on maintaining the property. You know, however that may go, and that could be a significant benefit to not only you, but your children as well. They don't want it anyway, and you want the deduction, and you can decide to keep it or sell it within that charitable account and not pay any of the tax. So there are all kinds of ways you can decide to give that piece of property, or maybe it's a piece of vacant land that's been sitting there, and it's been appreciating, but yet you're not drawing income. It's costing you the tax. If you want to liquidate it, the charitable trust may be the way to do that. And then you've benefited yourself and the charity hugely at the same time.
It's a brilliant idea. I'm surprised I've never heard it with you before. Is it, I don't say common, but have you done that with many of your clients?
So what's interesting is that it's not been that well used simply because they tend to be a little more complex. And frankly, it takes some time to get that done. So we don't see a lot of this, but we do see some. And I think the reason we're bringing it up is we think it's going to become more popular here in the coming years because of the changing tax rates we're at. Yes, okay. So then the charitable lead trust, as we discussed, the charitable remainder trust are the two major types, but the other parts of this is what types of assets do you own and could they make sense and what kind of a payout can you get? Well, some of the rules are the annual payout must be a minimum For the charitable remainder annuity trust or the unit trust must be a minimum of 5%. The annual payout may not exceed a maximum of 50%. So there's really a wide range of payouts that you can elect with these kinds of accounts. The duration cannot exceed your life or 20 years. So there is a limitation on how long these can go on. And the remainder interest in the trust itself for the benefit of the charity must be at least 10% of the initial trust value. So you see, you can actually draw these assets down, too, to make those payout amounts over the time or period of this trust. So while these are somewhat more complicated, for those of you who are charitably minded, and to want to possibly change your income and serve some tax incentives, these can be extremely helpful. And then we're going to talk about how these can offset IRA conversions as well. Let's talk about that after the break, shall we?
Good morning. Are you ready for some Shea stats? Here you go. The S&P 500 is up 11.9% year-to-date total return through the close of trading last Friday, April 16th of 2021, the completion of the first 15 weeks of the calendar year 2021. That's from BTN Research. The NASDAQ Composite Stock Index has outperformed the S&P 500 in each of the last four calendar years, so that's 2017 through 2020. Over the 4 years, the NASDAQ Composite has gained 150% total return, while the S&P 500 has gained an 81% total return. That's from BTN Research. Inflation, as measured by the Consumer Price Index, or CPI, was up 6.62% in March of 2021, the highest monthly rate recorded in the United States since June of 2009, almost 12 years ago. There have been just 6 months in the last 30 years when the monthly U.S. inflation has been greater than 0.62%, and that's from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. The mortality rate in the USA was 1.03% in 2020, the highest mortality rate in our country in 77 years. The nation's mortality rate peaked at 1.07% in 1943. As recently as 2009, our mortality rate was 0.79%, the lowest rate nationwide since 1912, and that's from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. An increase in the top corporate marginal tax rate from 21% to 28%, and an increase in the top individual marginal tax rate from 37% to 39.6% would result in a loss of 1 million U.S. jobs in 2022 to 2023, according to a study released on Thursday, April 8th of 2021, and that's from the National Association of Manufacturers. Well, this is pretty interesting. The average 30-year fixed-rate mortgage as of October 9th of 1981 was 18.63%, the highest national average recorded in U.S. history. The average 30-year fixed-rate mortgage last week as of Thursday, April 15th of 2021, was 3.0%. That's from Freddie Mac. The average age of a first-time U.S. homebuyer in 2021 was 36.1 years old, and that's from the New York Fed Consumer Credit Panel. An article questioning Bernie Madoff's investment strategy titled Don't Ask, Don't Tell appeared in print on May 7th of 2001, or 7.5 years before his Ponzi scheme was discovered. When asked about the investment policy approach that he utilized, Madoff replied, "It's a proprietary strategy and I can't go into great detail." Madoff died in prison last week, April 14th of 2021, at the age of 82. His prison sentence began on July 14th of 2009. The source is Barron's. Well, this is interesting. Computer chips, critical to processing capabilities of today's computers, include copper foils that are 50 times thinner than a strand of human hair. That's from Financial Times. And here's one last Shea stat. Personal bankruptcies in the United States in 2020, non-business bankruptcies, totaled 522,808. down 66% from personal bankruptcy filings in 2010. And that's from the United States courts. All right, well, it's good to be back. Hope you have a great week.
Thank you, Shay Pataja.
Oh, those are some fascinating stats this week, eh? Yes, comments, please.
Yeah, well, that mortgage rate of 18%. Wow.
Yeah. Ouch. 3% seems like quite a deal still, doesn't it?
Do you
remember why was it 18% back in the 80s?
Oh, interest rates skyrocketed. The Fed Reserve Chairman, Paul Volcker, decided to let those rates rise because they were trying to get inflation under control and letting that thing go on up to match the rates. And it certainly slowed things down. It did.
So Shay had another stat that said inflation is going up noticeably. Does that mean interest rates would... Didn't they pledge
interest rates are on the way up. They've already been. They've been reflecting that. But there is some real inflation pressure from the significant amount of government cash coming into the economy through the Fed. Widespread printing of money. Actually, we're at the highest rate of worldwide debt issued through central banks. We've not been this high since the early 40s. We're at 125% of worldwide GDP, which is at an all-time record. So that peak that was achieved back in the 40s, we're right there right now. The graph is stunning. We're at a nadir, if you will, of debt related to governments worldwide. And the U.S. is certainly a part of that. Yes. And that tends to be inflationary. And it also tends to put a damper on economic growth because of the competition for money out there. Because of that competition, interest rates tend to rise and so do costs. And the costs are going to be reflected not only in interest rates, but also taxes, as Shay alluded to there in the stats.
Go ahead.
So if the interest rates went up substantially, let's just say 6% or something, the U.S. would be in a world of hurt, wouldn't they?
Well, yeah, the cost would just skyrocket for their own debt. Because, honestly, I don't know what the composition is of their debt right now, how quickly it comes up for renewal, the average maturity, if you will. But absolutely, it would cost them significant. And then their spending... Could their spending go actually down, Ron? It totally messes with my mind to think that the government could actually cut its spending. I can't put my arms around that. I really can't. So anyway,
it seems like they're asking for more right now.
Yeah, I don't know where you get that idea, but yes, it is. It does seem that way. So some of the other possible ways of gifting are also the pooled income fund. So these vehicles are really significant, and it tends to be a much simpler vehicle than the charitable remainder trusts as well. If you're looking to generate income but want to give smaller portions to charity, a pooled income fund may be your best choice. And by the way, this article is from, it's called The Balance. The Balance, 8 types of charitable giving. The pooled income fund may be your best choice. You can pool together different securities and or combine them with cash to create a larger amount of money to distribute to charity. Money is paid out to you and any other beneficiaries that have pooled together assets to the fund. At your death, the remainder of the pooled income fund is donated to charity. Mm-hmm. So you do get income from it and a deduction. But at your death, the balance goes to charity. So a relatively simple way to set up, in essence, a charitable trust. The private foundation, now there are different deductions allowed for different gifts made, too, whether it's gifts of property, whether it's related to the charity itself. So you get significant different deductible amounts as a percentage of that gift allowed. Keep that in mind whenever you're thinking of giving. Cash is always king when it comes to its full deductibility versus other types of gifts. All right. Private foundations are charities set up as charitable trusts or corporations. If you're looking to set up your own charitable foundation, A private foundation could be a great way to get the family involved, particularly if you have a cause that's very dear to your heart. Although there are stricter regulations and tax laws, a private foundation can give grants to individuals and you can retain control of donated assets. The deductibility for the private foundation, and I'm going to actually find that number here, a private foundation, if it's a public charity, your gift is 60%. For a private foundation, it's 30%. So it's literally half the deductible amount. So there is some cost in terms of deductibility in keeping control of that asset. It could be worth a trade-off in the end to you, given that you do want to set up that private foundation and have those available. Now, John has also given us a note, contribution of your closely held stock even while you're involved. With a remainder salary, get benefit of having your employees know the profits are helping the charity. Oh, okay. So John's talking about gifting your own privately held stock within your own company. Now, that's a radical concept. So you could possibly gift that as well. And it's amazing, again, these conversations that you can have with your CPA and also your advisor. How are we on time here, Ron?
We're
just
good.
Checking. Good. So in terms of what this looks like, and by the way, next week we're going to talk, before we get moving here too much, things rich people do. What are the activities in life that they do in terms of the wealthy? 21 habits of the healthy we're going to try to get to next week. I thought it was a great article. We want to talk about, frankly, from the Reader's Digest. The Reader's Digest. The Reader's Digest had a great article. The actual name of the article are Things Rich People Rarely Do, but I thought I'll just call it Things Rich People Actually Do in their daily lives from a discipline standpoint. So the impact of charitable giving and endowments, tremendous what you can do in terms of deductions, in terms of income, in terms of turning assets into income that previously may not have been giving you any income at all, and also, of course, helping the charity and possibly your children as well, and seeing the benefits of that.
Well, that's a good tease for next week. I look forward to that, but it means it's our cue to wrap up today with Prout Financial Design's New Retirement Radio. As always, a lot of the information, just go to proutfinancialdesign.com. There are links where you can listen to past shows, make appointments with Heidi, with Dennis, whomever. Everything you need is right there.
You bet. Proutfinancialdesign.com.
Thanks so much for listening. You can find us online at proutfinancialdesign.com. That's P-R-O-U-T, financialdesign.com. Also, you'll be able to find us on iTunes and SoundCloud.